All right, our next guest is Jillian Del Signor, head of ETF distribution at JP Morgan Asset Management. JP Morgan is a top 10 ETF provider. Jillian is also co-president of Women in ETFs, which is a tremendous organization focusing on equality and diversity across the ETF industry and really just the broader investment space. Jillian is on the line with us from Chicago. Jillian, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, Nate. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're going to focus on fixed income this week. And I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I think bonds might be the single most challenging area of investing right now. And nothing's ever easy in investing, right? But it does seem like investors are having a really difficult time wrapping their heads around fixed income. And you look just this year, we've had an inverted yield curve. There's something like $17 trillion in negative yielding bonds around the world. Last week, we actually saw the 10-year Treasury yield spike the most since 2016. So what do you make of the bond market right now? Just at a high level, do you agree this is a difficult environment for investors?
Oh, absolutely. I will tell you, as I'm on the road with my team talking to clients, it's certainly a huge part of what we talk about and the bulk of what we talk about. Because as I think about the bond markets right now, I think of one, maybe two words, and that would be uncertainty, very much to your point, and volatility. I mean, just a few months ago, we were all positioning and expecting rate hikes. And here we sit, you know, following a cut. And even within our own firm, if you talk to our global fixed income team, you know, they expect cuts at the next three meetings. If you talk with our chief global strategist, Dr. David Kelly, and our market insights team, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with, they expect at least one, possibly two more cuts this year, but think that the Fed really will be challenged to stop there. So even internally, you know, we have differing views, just illustrating that uncertainty that abounds in fixed income markets right now. And you know, thinking about that, the yield curve inversion, it was interesting. Dr. Kelly recently said that that's not even something that you should necessarily think of anymore as that infallible indicator of the pending recession, because if you think about it, we're coming out of this decade of unprecedented monetary policy, zero, even negative rates, as you mentioned, around the world. So this really doesn't even resemble the bond markets we've had in the past, which just adds to the uncertainty, I think, that investors, especially the ones that we've been talking to, certainly feel, as you mentioned, and really are struggling with what to do from a portfolio perspective.
Well, your point just on JP Morgan's internal resources trying to make heads or tails of what's going on, you know, that's really enlightening, because very few firms, if any, are bringing the intellectual capital to the table that JP Morgan is. And so just to see how difficult it is assessing the environment, I think that speaks volumes. And, you know, something else, too, I think here is just looking at risk and reward, right? And I've mentioned this on the podcast previously, but let's say you look at something like the 30-year U.S. Treasury. You know, does that strike you as a great investment opportunity to loan your money to the government for 30 years at 2.4%? The risk reward just doesn't feel good there, even though maybe it does end up being a good place longer term. I think that's a good example.
Absolutely. I mean, I think as I look at our fixed income lineup, particularly within ETFs, you know, that's one of the things we've really worked hard to do as we've constructed that lineup within fixed income, is to provide just a whole host of choices. You know, I mentioned our global fixed income team earlier that, you know, they run a global bond portfolio that has the flexibility to invest everywhere across the world, not tied to any duration or sector or anything along those lines, have ventured into factor-based fixed income. I think folks are getting less and less tied to benchmarks as they become more aware of some of the challenges related to those benchmarks and are allowing themselves some more flexibility when it relates to investing in what is becoming a really challenging fixed income market.
Yeah, and I want to get into some of those JP Morgan bond ETFs, but I thought before we do that, a good point of comparison is maybe to look at ETFs tracking the Barclays U.S. Aggregate Bond Index, yeah. Because right now the two most popular bond ETFs both track that, right? And I think a lot of investors look to this for the core of their bond portfolios. However, I know based on past conversations you and I have had, you do see some shortcomings here. So do you want to start there and then maybe we can get into the JP Morgan ETFs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a really important topic because, you know, generally speaking, you know, I think about my many, many years in the ETF industry, and I think most investors, not all, most investors understand that market cap weighted equity indexes are really constructed and the companies are weighted based upon the market capitalization of that company. So the larger you are, the larger weighting that you get, the more expensive that you are, the higher weighting that you get. And that can lead to large overweights in particular sectors and stocks. Now, if you move to the bond markets, I would argue that it's really not well known how passive indexes, ones that you mentioned, are really weighting. And that would be akin to market cap weighting, debtor weighting. So what that means is that in something like the ag, the most indebted companies are getting the highest weight in the index. So I just don't think that people fully appreciate the dynamic there. And that index, which has historically been, you know, sort of that ballast in the portfolio, it has meaningfully changed over the years. And if you look at one of the most significant changes, and one that we've been spending a lot of time talking about, that's really surprised clients as we've talked to them, is to hear about the expansion of the corporate sector in particular in the index. So there's been this rapid growth in corporate debt issuance, which has pushed that expansion. So if you look at that index today, approximately a quarter of that index is in the corporate sector, and that's up from 17% in 2008 and actually is a 35-year high. And if you even take a little bit of a deeper dive, that driver of the increase has been issuance of the lowest quality bonds, triple Bs. So it's that sector that's driving more of the risk in that index. And I just don't think that people appreciate that change in something like the aggregate over the past, call it, couple of decades.
Well, something else here, too, similar to my point on the 30-year U.S. Treasury, in the ag, we've seen the yield continue to come down, as we have in bonds across the globe, but that duration has stayed pretty consistent, if not ticked up a little bit. So I think that's made it, you know, even more challenging. Okay, so let's run through a handful of bond ETFs that J.P. Morgan offers, and I think the most direct alternative to the ag is the J.P. Morgan U.S. Aggregate Bond ETF, ticker JAGG, JAG. This is actively managed. Do you want to explain the overall investment process here?
Absolutely. So JAG, as we refer to it, is actually, while it's registered as active, it's actually systematic. So think about it as the extension. I think a lot of folks have historically thought about factor-based investing as beginning and ending in equities, as we as an industry have talked so much about factor investing over the last number of years. This is our extension into factor-based fixed income, which is really a new frontier and one we're really proud to be leading the way in. So JAG is really taking a look specifically at the corporate sector of the benchmark index. What I just talked about, the one that has really been growing in size over the course of the last number of years. And what we're doing is we're applying that systematic process to pick the most attractive corporate issuers, looking through the lens of value, quality, and momentum. So taking that factor-based approach to the corporate sector of the ag. So said differently, looking for undervalued companies with strong profitability, low leverage, and recent positive performance in credit markets. And so again, we're only doing this on the corporate sector, but then because we do want to be benchmark aware, if you're asking someone to replace that core balance in the portfolio, we're sensitive to benchmark awareness. So then duration and sector matching it back to the index. So it's a more thoughtful approach to the corporate sector without taking on that large tracking relative to the index. And for 7 basis points, our clients that we're talking to are finding it a really compelling solution to deliver on more enhanced returns, particularly during those stressed credit environments, than you would get with more of the traditionally passive managed exposures.
And to be clear, is there any manager discretion here, or is it entirely systematic?
It is entirely systematic.
Okay. Now, a couple of other ETFs that caught my attention are the J.P. Morgan Global Opportunities Bond ETF, which you were alluding to earlier, ticker JPGB, and then the J.P. Morgan Core Plus Bond ETF, JCPB. These are also both actively managed. Do you want to run through either or both of those?
Sure. I can touch on JPGB. It's a bit of a mouthful sometimes, give you a little bit of color on that. So JPGB is run by our global, actually both those products you mentioned are run by our global fixed income currency and commodity business. It's about $500 billion business here at JP Morgan. And it was really exciting for us, as we have with all of our products, to be able to bring that really successful capability into the ETF market. It was something that we really didn't see, right? There was a bit of a gap in this space in the ETF market. And so What JPGB is, you can think about it as really kind of that best ideas, highest conviction ideas coming out of that global fixed income team. You know, they're able to navigate these really uncertain markets that we've talked about with that flexibility to invest across the globe. So if we were to just sort of boil it down, they're investing across 15 sectors, 50 countries, and they can shift dynamically duration, sector allocations to really try to produce returns in all markets and minimize volatility despite market conditions. So that for us has been something really compelling as clients, again, as I mentioned, they're kind of looking to pull themselves a little bit away potentially from that benchmark orientation within fixed income to really seek opportunities where they can, given the uncertainty in markets.
And so would this best be thought of as an unconstrained bond fund or a go-anywhere fund?
That would be precisely right.
Okay. And Jillian, going back to the ag, and you begin to touch on this a little bit, and really I guess this is a question for bond indexing as a whole. Is there something inherent to fixed income that makes active management potentially a better option than what we see on the equity side?
You know, it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because if you look at the marketplace, if you look at the ETF universe, the bulk of the assets sit in passively managed strategies, some that you mentioned earlier. And I really think that it's because of a lack of choice. Because if you look at the broader asset management industry, the bulk of the assets actually sit in actively managed products. So I think that investors are telling us with their dollars, as well as anecdotally when we're speaking with clients, they tell us they really do value active management in fixed income. I think a lot because of the uncertainty that exists, and they want the portfolio managers to have that flexibility. And also because I think there is this challenge, if you look particularly at the sort of the core benchmark index and how much it's changed. I know if we look at our fixed income lineup, almost everything that we've put out is either going to be in the systematic vein or in the purely active vein, whether it's JPGB, JCPB, or even our largest fixed income ETF, JPST, which is bringing our global liquidity business, active management, into the ETF industry as well.
Yeah, and I think you just look at the numbers on the active side for fixed income. The performance numbers have been a lot better than what you see on the equity side. And something else I'll mention, I think there's a tremendous opportunity in the factor space for bond ETFs. So we were talking about JAG earlier. To me, this is really where we could see a proliferation of strategies.
I think, and what's interesting, Nate, is that so if you look at, I think, one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about, clients ask why, you know, has it taken so long to see something like a factor-based ETF come to market? And it really has to do with data. And if you think about, I'll use GE as an example. You know, if you're looking at GE stock, it's one, it's GE stock. If you're looking in the bond world, there's many, 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 many different GE bonds. And so it really took some time to be able to sort of collate all of that data and really be able to effectively navigate this from a portfolio management perspective and put something like JAG into market. But given the receptivity that we've seen, the funds up to $200 million in assets in less than a year, which we're pretty proud of, with a lot of momentum, I think you'll expect to see a lot more of this come to market.
Jillian, you mentioned JPST, so that's the JP Morgan Ultra Short Income ETF.
Yeah.
This was one of the biggest ETF stories last year, right? It took in a bunch of money, I think primarily because investors were concerned about rising rates. What about this year? Has that reversed at all with rates coming back in, or are you still seeing flows into the ETF?
We are seeing flows into the ETF. You know, it's interesting to your point. I mean, JPST was an amazing story last year. We launched this fund in May of 2017, $100 million, started last year at $100 million and sits today at $8.5 billion. So a lot of that flow did come in last year. But this year we've seen $3.5 billion still come into the fund. So really, if you look at it, it's been, to your point, last year it was all about pulling in duration, right? And that was clearly the story. This year we've continued to see a couple of different things, really three main use cases. One is money has continued to move down the curve into the short end because they're able to capture attractive yields given, you know, sort of the yield curve inversion that we talked about earlier. And what's interesting about JPST, it's remained really attractive because you can actually obtain a very similar amount of income and yield to the aggregate index for a fraction of the duration, interest rate risk, and credit risk. So a lot of folks have been pairing JPST with ag-like products like our own JAG, which has been an interesting trade as well. We've continued to also see money move out of cash, so out of money market funds and deposits as those rates have started to fall. And they're looking to take that one step out from cash because, again, JPST is not a cash product. But if they're willing to take that step out from cash and pick up some yield that they've seen fall on their money market products. So it's been really interesting to see the different use cases that have continued, despite the fact that we are no longer sort of staring down the barrel of a potential rising rate environment. And as we mentioned, have raised, you know, close to $4 billion just this year.
As you know, there are some other ultra short income ETFs on the market. What do you view as the differentiator here? Why do you think there has been so much investor interest?
Yeah, what I think is so great about JPST, and this is kind of what I mentioned earlier about our GFIC, our Global Fixed Income Currency and Commodity team. You know, if you look across the JP Morgan ETF lineup, what we've been able to do is bring across the board our proven investment capabilities into the ETF industry. And that is incredibly well illustrated through JPST. It's managed by our global our global liquidity team. This is a team that manages almost $600 billion in liquidity, ultra short, and short duration assets. So a lot of the competitor products out there are managed by bond managers that are coming down the curve. We have a global liquidity manager that's moving just slightly out the curve, and they take a really conservative approach. And so I think that's been a really valuable component of the story for JPST, is having that management capability, that active management capability, and bringing it into the ETF wrapper with something priced at 18 basis points has been also a very attractive price point for us. But I think more than anything, it really has been bringing that capability of our global liquidity business into the ETF realm. And then you start to see, you know, you sort of start with advisor usage, and then it starts to gain scale and liquidity, and then you get institutional usage, and then it starts to snowball from there. And that's precisely what we saw with JPST over the course of the last year and a half.
Jillian, we have about 2 minutes left on a completely different note, and this probably won't come as a surprise to you, but I have to ask you about the JP Morgan Beta Builders lineup.
Sure.
And specifically the Beta Builders U.S. Equity ETF, ticker BBUS. So, look, there's been a lot of talk recently about larger firms like JP Morgan allocating to their own ETFs. Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas calls this bring your own assets, BYOA, and a lot of firms do this. But I was just curious, BBUS is currently the lowest cost ETF on the market without using any fee waivers. It's only 2 basis points.
Right.
But it hasn't really seen the assets that some of the other beta builder ETFs have. A few of those hit $1 billion pretty quickly. The question I have is, can you tell us anything about the process for how ETFs are allocated internally to ETFs like BBUS? And are you surprised at all that this ETF hasn't grown as fast as the others?
No, I mean, we are incredibly excited about BBUS and adding it to our Beta Builders lineup. The Beta Builders lineup has been a really valuable addition to our overall suite, and I'll touch on that again in a second. But related to affiliates, you know, they are their own institutional investors and have their own due diligence processes that they manage. But if I look at the broader Beta Builders suite, I think what's been so valuable is the ability to bring at an incredibly competitive cost across the board these building block exposures for institutional and retail investors who are looking to get much more nuanced in the way that they're allocating and are looking for those building blocks. And so what makes me excited about the whole Beta Builders lineup, one of the things I should say that makes me really excited about the Beta Builders lineup, is if you look across our entire suite of products, which certainly has grown meaningfully since the 4 years that I've been here, actually 4 years this month, we've always aimed and have delivered on building a product lineup that crosses asset classes, equities, fixed income, which we've talked a lot about today, and alternatives. And now, with the introduction of the Beta Builder suite, we're able to do that not only across asset class, but disciplines. So Beta Builders being purely market cap weighted, active, like JPST, JPGB, like we talked about earlier, and factor-based. So not only something like JAG, but our factor-based equity, both multi-factor and single factor. So I think it's really helped us fully build out our suite and make our conversations with clients that much more consultative and being able to offer such a huge breadth of product. So I think the beta builders have added to our lineup in a pretty meaningful way.
Yeah, and we should mention BBUS is not unique in terms of its low cost. If you look at the other beta builders ETFs that are out there, all extremely low cost, highly competitive in their respective categories. Jillian, thank you so much for joining us this week. Excellent discussion as always. Look forward to visiting again soon.
Awesome, Nate. Thank you so much.
That was Jillian Del Signore, head of ETF distribution at JPMorgan Asset Management.